Welcome to Bilston Creek Farm. In 2004, the farm was bought and restored by the Penn family, but was first settled in 1851 by Hudson's Bay Company settlers. For 130 years of this time, it belonged to the Whitty family, for whom Whitty's Lagoon below the farm is named. The original farm included the lagoon, but this was sold as parkland in 1969. The history of these lands chronicles the time of contact between Europeans and the indigenous peoples present here for as much as 15,000 years following immigration from Asia, probably across a 43 nautical mile Bering land bridge, following the last ice age. European discovery of the lands and peoples around the Salish Sea came relatively late in global exploration because of the rigors of the marine environment guarding the entrance to this relative sanctuary. This is that story. Bilston Creek Farm sits on the edge of Juan de Fuca Strait, which stretches out to the northwest, opening out into the Pacific at Cape Flattery on the American side. In 1778, Captain Cook landed near this cape but headed back out to sea because of bad weather. He had missed the opening into the elusive Juan de Fuca Strait. He finally came ashore at Nootka Sound north of Tofino on the west coast of Vancouver Island. 4 years earlier, also in search of a northwest passage, the Spanish had anchored off Nootka Sound and made first European contact with the peoples of Vancouver Island. They were, however, out of water and weakened by scurvy, and before they could go ashore, a storm blew up and they had to cut their anchor and flee. It is a testament to the ferocity of this rugged coastline, the graveyard of the Pacific, that had protected this place where we are from discovery for so long. 200 years earlier, a British marine merchant, Michael Locke, preoccupied with the notion of finding a northwest passage to service trade with the Orient, met an old Greek mariner in the port of Venice, peddling a tale about the existence of just such a passage on the west coast of North America. He went by the name Juan de Fuca. He had spent decades working as a Spanish mariner and claimed to have found the passage in 1592. Locke, like Juan de Fuca, was unable to convince anyone to pay for another expedition. After Captain Cook's first landing in 1778, the English and Spaniards returned to Nootka, and it became a hub in the new fur trade with the Orient. But it was 12 more years before the Spaniard, Manuel Quimper, in his ship the San Carlos, found and explored the Juan de Fuca Strait. If you look down beyond the lavender fields, this is where he would have passed, along the shoreline below us, after anchoring in Pedder Bay just up the beach to the right, maybe securing water from Sitting Lady Falls below the farm. He had also made contact with the powerful Salish chief Tetticus, who helped the Europeans traverse the treacherous waters off Race Rocks. The wives of Tetticus were left to paddle their own canoe through that same treacherous channel. It would be another 8 years before the Spaniards and British together surveyed the region and discovered that this land was in fact an island. They named it Vancouver and Quadras Island after the two expedition leaders. This was a time at which Britain and Spain almost came to war because of events at Nootka, but this was subsequently resolved by the Nootka Conventions, in which Britain finally assumed sovereignty of now Vancouver's Island. Within 40 years, the Hudson's Bay Company had established their new northwest outpost, Fort Victoria, in the inner harbour close to the site of the present Empress Hotel. The local Lekwungen peoples built a camp opposite them and engaged in trading. Finally, the Hudson's Bay Company was ready to bring in settlers, and in November 1850, the bark, S.V. Torrey, left East India Docks in London with 140 people on board, headed for Vancouver Island. 6 months later, on May 14, 1851, the ship arrived in Victoria Harbour, having rounded Cape Horn, the southern tip of South America. On board was a 17-year-old girl, Martha Cheney, travelling with her uncle Thomas Blinkhorn. She would go on to be the first European woman to be married in what would become Western Canada. The diary she kept is the only surviving diary by a woman pre-Gold Rush in the colony. Her new home would turn out to be Bilston Creek Farm. The head of the Hudson's Bay Company, James Douglas was also the governor of the newly minted British colony of the island of Vancouver. Douglas had obtained money from the Hudson's Bay directors to negotiate treaties with the indigenous peoples for use of the land. These Douglas treaties included land in Metchosin. The second settler to purchase property was Captain James Cooper. He named his new farm after his hometown in England, Bilston. Captain Cooper had brought Thomas Blinkhorn on the journey from England to act as a farm manager. Blinkhorn had been in Australia for 9 years, and it has been suggested that he distinguished himself in aiding the rescue of Captain Sir John Franklin, who had become lost in the outback. He returned to England, but decided to try his hand in a new colony. There is some intrigue concerning Blinkhorn's time in Australia. He was convicted of stealing a horse in England and was transported to the penal colony in Tasmania. The horse had been stolen in retribution for an inheritance denied him by his stepfather-in-law. And one more piece of intrigue, this man's name was Cheney, grandfather of the young niece, Martha Cheney, who now accompanied Blinkhorn on his new adventure. Presumably amends were made in the family. Blinkhorn, with his wife and niece, soon were establishing themselves on the 350-acre farm. Martha's diary gives us insight into what that life was like in this new land. The second volume of that diary, starting in September 1853, was found in the Bilston farmhouse and is now in the BC archives. The first volume was never found. Here are a few excerpts from that diary. These include references to Fort Victoria, interactions with the indigenous peoples, and Martha's wedding. The language and grammar used are as written for a diary in 1853, unaltered. If you enjoy these, a larger selection of excerpts can be listened to on the other audio channel. These give a first-hand description of life in the new colony. Listen as you wander the farm, imagining how it might have been 170 years ago.
September 22nd, 1853. Mr. Swanson came in from the fort in a canoe, wanting to go to Souk, but could not get a canoe from the Indians on account of their feast, so went back to the fort again after dinner in Captain Kirk's boat. Captain Mitchell of the brig William in Pedder Bay had gone to the Sandwich Islands. Captain Grant came in the evening from Souk on horseback, and I had a ride with Uncle around the plain. September 25th, 1853. Sunday, Captain Grant came in to breakfast from Mr. Langford's on horseback. Mr. Ford, the engineer of the sawmill, came over in the afternoon. We all went down to the Indian village, it being their feast, and we went to see them. When we got down the old Tai, that is the chief man, he invited us in the camp to see his friends, so we went in, and then it was, "O Siam, Siam, how do you do?" Siam means the same as Tai. They were very proud to see us, so they honoured us with a dance and a song. It was quite amusing to see them all with their knives, pistols, swords and guns in their hands, holding them above their heads, now and then firing a gun or two out of the roof. Then we saw about 9 more canoes come in. Then they shoot, and the canoes come up in a row, the Indians that are in the canoes singing and dancing all the time they are coming. When they get near the beach, one man goes to the edge of the water and makes a speech to the Indians that are in the canoes, saying that his heart is very good towards them and hopes theirs are towards him, and that he had invited them to come to this feast and share with some blankets that they had to give away. But if their hearts are not good towards them, they were not to come on shore, and a great deal more of what I did not understand. Then there is a hooping, drumming, and dancing. After seeing all that, we came home as it was getting dusk. Captain Grant stayed all night. Mr. Ford went home. July 19th, 1855. I was married to Mr. Eller by the Reverend Mr. Cridge. We were married at home by special license. It was a beautiful day, but very warm. We had a large dinner party, had a tent made outdoors, it being too warm in the house for so many. The governor and his family honoured us with their company, and beside them were Mr. and Mrs. Langford and family, Captain and Mrs. Cooper, Mr. and Mrs. Barr, the two Miss Reeds, Mrs. Muir and family, Mr. Newton, Mr. Pierce, Mr. McKay, and one or two others. Miss Mary Langford was bridesmaid and Mr. Thomas Cooper bridesman. The British man of war, Brisk, came into the harbour the same day. Mr. Tyne, one of the midshipmen, called here to report to the governor. October 13th, 1856. Mr. Cridge came down to see Uncle and read to him the sixth chapter of Matthew and concluded with prayer. And I'm grieved to say it was the last time that Mr. Cridge saw him, though that visit was blessed to him. I am happy to say he knew that his strength was failing him. But he did not for a moment think his end was so near. He died that same night at 12 o'clock. He went to bed at his usual time, no worse, and he had a good sleep, and woke up coughing, and with it broke a blood vessel and was suffocated. He never spoke again. I never witnessed a more happy life than his. I trust he has gone to rest, poor uncle. He was buried in Victoria Church by the Reverend Edward Cridge, Vancouver's Island, October 16th, 1856.
Blinkhorn would subsequently be described by the Honourable Charles William Wentworth Fitzwilliam as by far the most energetic settler on the island. After his death in 1856, the farm was sold and passed through a few hands with names now recognisable as streets and places such as Yates and Burnaby. In 1867, the farm would be bought by John and Charlotte Whitty, whose family would own it for 134 years. The Whittys had come to Victoria from the San Juan Islands during the Pig Wars about 8 years earlier. This skirmish between the USA and Britain was over the exact positioning of the new border between the mainland and the new colony of Vancouver's Island. Worried that they may get caught in the troubles, they decided to flee from San Juan Island to Victoria. The story told by a descendant was that the Whittys departed in an open boat during a storm with Mrs. Whitty fully pregnant. She went into labour and the baby, Billy, was born on board in the Strait of Juan de Fuca. It was said his nationality was unclear as to being American or British. John and Charlotte went on to have many children, but Billy ended up on the section of land which included the present Bilston Creek Farm, including the current farmhouse which was built in 1902. It can be seen on the south side of the orchard. He married Martha Grau in 1903 and they had three children. Billy went on to fight in the trenches in World War I as an older man, but with experience in timber management that was put to good use. While restoring the old farmhouse 100 years later in 2005, a bit of metal popped out of a lump of soil while excavating for new foundations. It was a matchbox cover and engraved the Somme, an example of trench art made from munitions casings. Billy had travelled by steamboat to Vancouver, by rail across Canada, ship again across the Atlantic to England, and then off to the Western Front. He survived and returned to live out his life on the farm and die in this farmhouse, an old man, in 1950. Look at the farm map to see where you may view the matchbox trench artifact. Over the next 50 years, the farm would lapse into relative disuse, and when purchased in 2004 was an ocean of bramble and broom concealing a half century of debris and garbage. Following purchase, the land was gradually restored, including the original Whitty orchard. During Prohibition, cider orchards were cut down across North America. When Prohibition ended, hops were substituted and beer replaced cider. Any apple orchards that were planted used new variants where appearance and shipping resilience were more important attributes. Consequently, the few old orchards that survived, such as along this Mechosin coast, are highly sought after for their cider heritage. Our decision to grow lavender was based on the suitability of the climate and soil in this recognized lavender region, which includes Sequim in Washington, the San Juan and Gulf Islands, and the southern end of Vancouver Island. The field in front of the barn is deep sand left by the terminal moraine of glaciation and has tremendous drainage. Lavender hates wet feet and thrives in this south-facing field. We also keep bees, which can forage here on lavender, blackberry, maple, and during the summer, plentiful fireweed in the high country looking down on Juan de Fuca Strait. Come and see the products in the store made from our lavender, cedar, apples and honey, including essential oils and hydrosols, the distillation products of lavender and cedar, as well as our heritage apple cider vinegar, soaps, bath salts, lip balm, teas, hot chocolate and more.